Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, no bank stocks and jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures, hey, we're up. We're up every day. We're good. S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up 79. Just a walk in the park, just investing. Just put money in there and every day just count them up. Actually, it's been kind of easy watching everybody do that, watching clients make dough and everything. It's actually kind of fun. It's going to, you know, I guess maybe the fun will keep going. We've got the best man in the world ever in the White House. He's going to make this happen for us. So we got guys whose flunky now is on the Fed board on like a part-time job. And nobody in the Senate will stand up and say, wait a minute, what are you doing here? But that's the way the world is. And as long as, I guess, the market goes up, whatever anybody does is okay, Carl.
Well, you know, speaking of Congress and, you know, I mean, the Senate, of course, is part of Congress, right?
They used to be. I don't know what they are now. They're a bunch of intimidated weasels, what they are now.
Well, it's, yeah, they used to be, but now they're just a bunch of intimidated weasels. You know, it's rather amusing, really, when you look at the monetary picture. I've had a number of fairly decent debates over this, you know, not just here, but on my site too, because, you know, needless to say, everybody looks at this and goes, "What the f?" Right? Yeah. And the reality of it is, I don't know how many times I've gone through it. I mean, I pointed out leverage when I wrote the book, is that without bonds, without government bonds, because unlike Japan, Japan's central bank, of course, can transact in anything they want and did. Okay, which is...
Well, we can do that here when we feel like it. We did mortgages.
Well, okay, not really. Because the Federal Reserve is, by statute, constrained to purchase only things that have the full faith and credit of the United States behind it. Now, of course, they violated that in 2008. And I seem to remember that during this period of time, we elected a man that many people call Black Jesus, even to this day, and neither he nor his Department of Justice nor anybody else did anything about the fact that they, in fact, bought tens of billions of dollars worth of bonds that were not at the time backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. And then Congress...
What part about crisis don't you get?
Well, what part about the law...
How many emergencies declared by this guy are really emergencies?
Well, how many emergencies declared by those guys have been really emergencies?
Well, okay. Well, before you go any further on this, he was dealt a shitstorm from Bush.
Look, it's always somebody else's fault. Chief, Carter was the last president that said, you know what, I'm the one in the left seat, the plane crashed, and it's my fault, even though it wasn't. And it wasn't, okay? But, you know what, and since then, it's always the other guys. It's always the other guy, because I don't care if it's Obama, Trump,
I never
Biden,
said
whatever.
I never said it was the other guy.
Well, what I'm saying is that the Federal Reserve, if Congress would stop deficit spending, if they cut that crap out, the Fed would not have anything with which to twist the lever, because what they have to twist the lever is government bonds, treasuries. That is the tool that they have to use. It's the only tool by law that they have to use.
Now, I went after Bernanke like a rabid dog when he was doing it with the Fannie and Freddie paper, because on the face of every one of those issues was the fact that they weren't backed by full faith and credit of the Federal Reserve. By the way, I was blackballed on all the major networks.
By the letter of the rule, you're absolutely correct. But the fact is, but nobody pays attention to the rules.
Chief, look, this is why we're here, okay, in the world we live in today.
Why do you think
we have people that are so disaffected that no matter what they do, they get it in the back door?
Well,
right?
Other people, no matter what they do, they get it fed to them on a silver spoon.
Well, actually, they steal it from the people who get it in the back door.
In their mind, they're not stealing it; they're capitalists.
Oh, of course. This is always, you know,
economically, what you just said, okay, is one of my, talk about a segue, in one of my arguments regarding the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Okay, if you were to listen to, and if he was sitting over here, boy, it'd be pretty hard to debate that guy because he knew everything. I would actually debate with Milton Friedman. The monetarist school says the cause of the Great Depression was not the crash of 29, and it wasn't the fact that the 80% of the economy was already in a depression, the rural area. It was the Federal Reserve allowed the money supply, because banks shut down, to drop by 20 or 25%. It was in 6 months or something. And the idea was, if they wouldn't have let that happen, the Great Depression would evidently not have happened in their mind, which I think is total BS.
I think it's complete crap.
But it wouldn't have been as severe. Now the question is, how would you do it? Now there's two issues. One is, just like this time, okay, I'm drawing a parallel here, and you can tell me I'm nuts. There wasn't enough inventory of bonds out there to buy to make any difference in their mind, so they had to go for the mortgages. Now, in the Depression times, I think what Friedman and those guys forgot, there wasn't enough float in any kind of federal bonds or other bonds. There's no way the Fed could have bought enough bonds, because there weren't enough out there. There wasn't 20% of the GDP in bonds out there. What could they have bought to keep the money supply up? The only way they could have done it, and nobody ever suggested it in the 2 years I was listening to these guys, is somehow or another, you needed to have, the problem was that great-grandpa Carl went to the bank, and the door hit him in the nose. They said, no, your $2,000 is gone.
Right.
Somehow or another, they would have had to have, in arrears, they would have had to have some sort of a FICA insurance, and said, okay, we're going to give great-grandpa Carl at least $1,000 of his bucks back. Because it stripped great-grandpa of his entire savings. It stripped his balance sheet. It wasn't an income recession. It was a balance sheet recession.
Right.
And I've never heard anybody say that. But if you didn't get the money back to the people who lost it, you weren't doing anybody any good. In fact, you might have made it worse by giving other people all the dough.
Okay.
But so now what you're saying, the same thing happened in 2008. Whether it was Obama or whether it was Bush, the people were totally misinformed by the Fed and the Treasury. They had no idea of the depth of this mortgage crap, where people were borrowing all this money in Japan and buying stuff here and scalping the 4%. And the money was some of those bond groups weren't even bond groups. They were synthetics, because the demand for them was so high. That's why when people say, oh, man, it was really, the stewardess having two houses, That was one piece of the pie. That was dollar one. There was $30 worth of leverage on every dollar of mortgage. So I'm saying when these go outside the lines the whole time. The only way you could do this, and by the way, with this guy they just put on the board yesterday, how's this ever going to happen? The only way it's ever going to happen is for Powell or Bernanke or whoever to say, deficit spend all you want, raise the taxes or borrow more. I'm not helping you.
Well, except.
Well, look what happens when this guy resists that. He's vilified. Everybody's on the thing is vilified. I mean, I never seen so much.
Chief, I get that. But here's the. Look.
You're saying if you were Powell, you would say, I'm not helping you?
No. If I was Powell, I would ask for a meeting with leadership.
Don't tell me Trump. Don't tell me Trump.
No, the leadership of both the House and Senate. Okay.
You think they don't know what's going on?
Actually, I know they know what's going on, and I know they know where it's centered, and I know that they've known this for, let's see, at this point it's been 12 years or thereabouts. I'd have to look at my calendar for the exact date, because I laid out the CMS crap in front of a bunch of Senate staffers in a physical meeting in D.C., in a meeting room, and was told directly by them that they knew exactly what was going on. That they, by the way, most of the people who are elected, unlike some of the people in the House, people elected in the Senate tend to at least have a working brain. Okay, that's not true with some House members. But for people in the Senate, it tends to be true. All right, you may think they're pricks or, you know, have all sorts of other things wrong with them in terms of how they look at the world. However, I don't think you can find very many of them that you can say are stupid. That's not true in the House. And they all told me to my face, okay, there were, I don't know, seven or eight of them. We're talking senior staff, not actual senators, but senior staffers. They told me to my face, they will never fix this because if they do, there will be a recession and they'll all lose their jobs.
They are, the issue they're having is...
Gee, if it was 15 years ago.
I understand it, but by saying the issue they continually have, and by the way, Kevin and I think had a long discussion about this a couple weeks. I think you might have been part of it. Regarding what is the job description? If you were to say to these guys, if you're, you know, by the way, your election's in a year, we're spending too much money. Now we can cover it three ways. And this is grade school. We can either raise taxes, not before the election. That ain't happening. Okay. We can just borrow a hell of a lot more. That's going to drive interest rates up. Oh, man, that ain't happening either. Or we can just print it for a little while. And, by the way, you won't notice it. After the election, we'll take care of it.
But by the way, the House and Senate can't print it. You know that, right?
It ends up... I understand that. But the point is, that's... So unless you put Solomon or George Patton or somebody into the Federal Reserve spot and say, I'm not doing it, first of all, the guy would never get appointed. Now, what kind of non-Trump lapdog will ever get that job when this guy's out?
What sort of non-Obama lap job?
I've never seen pressure like this,
Chief. Ever since
Volcker, there's no question that these guys they're the most influenced guys in Washington. We know that.
Of course,
but we're taking it to a new level.
Okay, why?
The new level is the guy owns places that are benefiting from increased inflation.
Oh, good Lord!
Did Obama own the Doral?
Chief. How? Where?
I know your intense hatred of Democrats won't let you see it. Did Obama own the Doral? Did Bush own the Doral? Who makes money? Guys who own resorts, guys who own property that have interest rates and prices go up, and all of a sudden their mortgage is a pimple on the ass of an elephant. That's what happens. Where am I wrong?
Where you're wrong, Chief, is that we have had a series of people in office, including Obama, who was literally unworthy of a doctorate, yet somehow he manages to get his way through two universities, through some mechanism that didn't have anything to do with his actual capacity to do the work.
We're going
to
compare his education with Trump's?
No, I'm not. We're not talking about education here. We're talking
about... Why are we even talking about Obama? We're talking about the new guy they put on the Fed.
Well, you know what? How about all the old guys that were put on the Fed? How about all the people that have been there, you know,
no matter who it is, you know, if it's somebody from your side of the aisle, if I bring up anything about today...
What's this got to do with...
When Obama was in office, I criticized Obama. I didn't say it was all Bush's fault.
What does this have to do with people on the side of the aisle? This is why we can't get anything done.
What we can't get anything done is the roles of what people are supposed to be doing in Washington have all become amazingly blurred. And we have a guy...
Chief, there's no blurring to it. Okay. When there is a Democrat in office, the problem is that the guy in office is a Democrat. It's not that he's a clown. It's not that he's screwing the... It's not that all of these guys on both sides of the aisle are literal communists. Literal communists. And the difference between a communist and a socialist is the communist has taken the gun out from underneath the chair. It was always there. And a socialist will sit there and tell you...
It continues... Every person, it continues to get worse. Every guy who comes
out. No joke. Gee, how about exponents? Did somebody repeal the laws of mathematics while I was sleeping last night?
The thing we're trying to talk about, Carl, is I think you and I are sensing that we're at the end of this rope or whatever the hell they all put
us on. Yeah, the game's over, collapse comes.
I don't see how anybody, and the thing of it is, we somehow, between all these guys and all these people, we somehow have dumbed down the population to the point where you can listen to, you know, how many zillion hours of financial TV, and not one person says, you know, the way this is going, even if he wins the tariff thing, which is problematic, he probably will because he's got a rigged court, but... But if he
does, I don't know that. I could argue either side of it. But yeah.
Okay, so either way, I think you and I, at the risk of even declaring any sort of agreement, think that the 660 on the tariffs is a little bold. That it's probably going to be, even if they're allowed to stand, 3-something, 4-something.
Yeah, my best guess is about half.
That's what I just said. Okay,
half a trillion.
Right. So where does that leave the federal spending? It leaves them in need of a dramatic tax increase.
Chief, do we need a dramatic? You say we need a dramatic tax increase. That's only because you don't want the theft to go away.
I didn't say that. I'm saying they're not going to do that.
Yes, you did. Yes. Oh, so because
I'm trying very hard to agree with you. Do you realize if you take just the income tax? Unless you start putting surcharges on the other stuff. If you take just the income tax, they need a 50% increase surcharge to cover this year.
I know. Do you realize that if we forced if we just enforced the existing...
We're not going to do that.
But Chief, then what you're saying is that the kind of thing that just happened out in Utah is going to become...
I don't know what that kid's motive was. I think there's a lot of people that have motives that have nothing to do with what we're talking about. Because there's a kid that never missed a meal in his life.
And by the way, he had a Challenger, which is a pretty effing nice car for a 22-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, and he was... By the, you know, speaking of which, I don't want to get involved in that conversation, but does this look like it's matching up to you? It sure as hell doesn't look like it's matching up to me. The guy parked his car one place, was walking on supposedly with the gun. Then you see him racing away in kind of the opposite direction, and all of a sudden he's 200 some miles away in his car and with the gun that I never saw somewhere out in the woods, some other place. How do you get from running into the neighborhood to the woods to back to the car?
All right, I'll give you my theory on that. The furry boyfriend was there.
Who?
The furry boyfriend.
Furry boyfriend.
His. So,
you mean there was another person involved?
His furry boyfriend.
All right, I didn't hear that, but I didn't see that piece. Anyway, we'll talk about that on Friday when we got more time. If we were gonna, we can do a bunch of things. You and I know that most of the money, the big deficit is in, well, the big deficit that's not covered by the Medicare payments and Medicaid payments is in that area.
All of it.
All right, let's be honest. Let me finish here with you. What I'm saying is we can do that one of two ways. We can start at the top with the drug companies, with the hospitals, and do all the stuff that you're always talking about that nobody can argue with. Or, don't forget, this is this guy's second term. He showed no inclination to do that his first term.
And
by the way, he's there 8 months and there's no inclination to this. The inclination we're going to see is we're going to cut off Medicaid, we're going to cut off this, we're going to cut off that, we're essentially just let them die. We're never going to cut their prescription price, we're just going to cut the prescription off from them and let them die. That appears to be the current strategy. rather than actually...
Which, by the way, won't actually solve the problem.
No, but I'm saying, instead of saying my favorite drug, since I know three or four of my friends are on it, instead of saying, you're not charging $7,500 a year for Eliquis, you bleep, we're just going to not pay the $75 for some people and have them get blood clots and let them die. That's the current solution that I see, which isn't really a solution, which you and I agree on.
I was going to say, why do you think that's a solution?
Well, if you just cut the money off, you're not paying anybody.
Well, but that's not a solution. First off,
it is for the Fed if they cut Medicaid payments off to the state.
No, okay. Look,
I didn't say it was a solution. I said it is. It appears we're just going to cut Medicaid payments off. Okay.
Well, there would be a problem with doing that. But here's so let's say that you let's just say for the sake of argument that you zeroed the Medicaid system. Okay. Now, by the way, if you think they're going to actually do that,
when you say zero, you're saying no federal money for states.
The block grants.
Yeah.
Take that line in the MTS and make it zero.
Make it zero. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That all right. By the way, if you did that, do you think that would actually solve the problem?
I didn't say it would. What I said was that appears to be our policy right now.
Well, okay. So then, essentially, what you're saying that the policy is the same exactly the same policy, in point of fact, that Barack Obama implemented with Obamacare.
What does one have anything to do with the other?
They are precisely the same thing from a federal budgetary point of view.
All right. Well, okay.
I'm not talking about who gets effed. Okay. I'm simply saying, from a budgetary point of view, all right, both of them are simply a subsidy by force, because, monopolies don't seem to work very well without the government pulling a gun out and shoving it in someone's face, because otherwise this thing called competition tends to destroy them. So there's any time you have
this
kind
of
monopoly,
behind something called a patent law, which nobody wants to go away.
This has zero to do with patents.
Why? Eliquis is still under patent.
So?
So that's why you can charge $7,500 and it probably costs $200.
No, you can't charge $7,500 if you sell it for $75 in any other country in the world.
Why?
Because the law says that's illegal. That is a violation of 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1, and you go to prison for 10 years, and goes to prison.
We're not sending anybody to prison.
Okay, so the problem isn't that there is a patent. The problem is that when it comes to the abuse of something that is supposed to be illegal and is supposed to carry hard felony prison time, nobody goes to jail. When you go rob a bank down at the corner, you'll go to jail.
I don't know. Educate me, as my aunt used to say. If I invent a hula hoop and charge $50 for it, it costs me $2.
Yeah.
And nobody can come close to a hula hoop for 17 years, and I decided to sell it in Uganda for $3. How's that a violation?
Because the law says.
You're saying the patent law contains.
No, not the patent law. 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 says that any attempt. By the way, the attempt part, the word attempt got added by Clayton after Sherman was passed. It said that actually monopolizing, restraining trade, or fixing prices, between the several states, in anything in interstate commerce between the several states or in international commerce.
Which doesn't include baseball, by the way. It's not interstate commerce.
Baseball has a specific exemption.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you do this, it is a criminal felony. It carries 10 years in prison for every single person who is involved.
Now, there's no monopoly here. They're given the product.
Chief, good God. Look, if I fix prices, and then you have Robinson Patman, by the way, that says it is against the law to discriminate on price between buyers of like kind and quantity. Which, by the way, that law, I shoved up a supplier's back door when I was running MCS. Successfully.
I think that that would more than likely, it had to do with quantity discounts, all kinds of stuff. I'm somewhat familiar with it. But I'm saying I don't see how you could if you did that, you couldn't give stuff. I don't think it. There's no way you win that case.
Baloney. The law. Look.
You're telling me that somehow you can sue the makers of Eloquist.
You don't sue. You charge them
with what?
You gave
it away at a discount to some country in Africa. That's the charge.
You indict them.
Okay, that goes nowhere.
No, you're wrong. The law is clear. You can't do this.
All right. So in other words, every time somebody says if you have problems with the paying the new blood pressure medication and you can prove hardship and we give it to you cheaper, that they're going to jail.
That is a crime.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. Nobody knows that but you.
The law hasn't been on the books for 100 years? It most certainly has.
They've been in commercials all day long, for God's sake.
I understand that. You know, do you know why I've been on this for the last 30?
Yeah, it's like a yell in a hurricane.
Okay, so the bottom line is that we are going to allow a part, and oh, by the way, while you're at it, okay, the other part of the, and one of the reasons that this is so pernicious and so damaging to America and to Americans, is that in the process of doing this, you corrupt the agencies that are supposed to be the watchdogs. You know, the FDA is the reason we didn't have thalidomide babies all over the place in America, because we had one woman in the FDA
She'd be fired.
Well, yes, she would. Okay. But the reason we didn't have it happen here in the United States and it did in Europe is because she stood up and blocked it in the U.S.
All right. I think the only thing we're arguing about is, you know, by the way, you're arguing constantly with somebody who agrees with you. My point is, we've gone so far. Do you realize how old we're getting?
Oh, I absolutely
you know what
do.
I'm saying?
It happens every day.
Nobody has any idea what in God's name we're talking about. Last week, I was talking to a bunch of young people. Every one of them was swearing a stack of Bibles that an executive order is a law.
Yeah, that's how stupid
it's because why would anybody believe what you just said after being inundated day and night by way expensive drug prices and the company telling you, by the way, if you really can't, if you can make your case, we'll give it to you cheaper, and we know we're selling them. Why would anybody think that is wrong? I mean, it's like if you walk down the street and somebody walks out and kicks you in the ass every single day, and no policeman, you keep complaining, nothing happens, all of a sudden 40 years later it happens to everybody. Nobody's even going to know that it's not a law to kick somebody else in the ass. We're at that stage. That's kind of the crux of our argument. Meanwhile, your buddy Larry Ellison's up another, God knows how much today, another $17 in the stack. I mean, it's the world that you and I look at, we hope it's not totally gone. But you can say who the people are. I would say that a Fed governor, to me, is a full-time job. It's supposed to be an independent sort of person, although nobody's ever totally independent. We know that. He's probably not a flunky. Some guy from the White House has a part-time job just so I know he's always going to vote. How did we get there from here?
Well, we got there from here because we stopped considering that monopolizing, restraining trade, or fixing prices across state and international boundaries was a crime, even though it has been listed as a crime for 100 years. We have allowed people to believe that, robbing banks is fine so long as you've got the right shirt on.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
As I have pointed out, there are exactly three ways to acquire something that you either want or need. One of them is that you work for someone, you provide some value to somebody else, and they in turn exchange something of value for your labor.
Oh, that's okay, that's old school. Come on.
Well, that's one way.
Yeah.
The second is you can rely on voluntary charity.
Wait a minute. You mean the J word?
Yeah, this J word.
Why would anybody want the J word? Job.
The W word. And that would even worse, right? It's got four letters instead of three. So, you know, that's one. The second is you can essentially beg, and through voluntary charity, somebody gives you something, okay, voluntarily. And the third is you can pull a gun out and threaten to kill them or throw them in jail. Well, they don't give it to you.
They got it. We want it. Let's take it.
They got it. We want it. Let's take it. By the way, what is all deficit spending? It is the latter.
By the way, is Joel around? Is he on yet?
Not yet.
Right. We got Hal in here, but we don't have Joel. All
right.
So, yeah. But you know, that's the thing is, those are the only three ways you can acquire something, okay? So we have gone from the J word and the W word, okay? And then you say, well, but so-and-so, you know, can't do for whatever reason, can't do for, you know, whatever the reason is, right? Okay, now, how does that create an obligation for you to be able to steal it from me?
Well, I, you know what is, you're in my opinion on this, you know, our point of view, this is this crazy part, is exactly the same. But you know where, I won't use the term mellow, which John Flanagan was here, because he's good with words. But I'll use the term blurred. Years ago, when Amazon was doing the crap here, and which they don't really do anymore, I guess. Although I think they still do some of it. I went to Best Buy and I was looking for a TV, and I see all these idiots looking at the TV, copying down the number.
Yeah.
And then getting on their phone and order it online, so they have to pay the taxes.
From Amazon, yeah.
They have to pay the taxes. Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, wait, how much? And I don't even know who the governor was at the time. How stupid could our governor be to essentially bury the people that are paying taxes? And so this firm, at the time Amazon was very young, can get around the taxes and grow like a weed. I mean, I said, how ignorant are our people? And one night I was out, you know, having a couple of cocktails, and there's all these guys from the exchange. And I said, you know, does it strike you guys that this Amazon's going to use this to put all these people out of business?
Right, and then
then they're going to raise their prices.
Of course.
To a person, they all said, what's the problem with that? That's just business. And I go, you guys ever hear like this? Clayton Act? Did you ever hear the Sherman? what are those?
Why do you think?
And now it's 20 years later, and you're expecting people to know this stuff. They don't know. They don't care. This is their world, Carl.
Chief, I know. Joel's up, by the way, right. So I'm going to get out of his way and get out of your way, and I guess I'll see you guys.
So we argued for a half hour when we agreed with everything.
Well, I don't know if we agreed on everything, but
pretty much.
We tried.
We tried. Talk to you on Friday, if not before. You can hang around in case Kenny doesn't show?
Yeah, I can hang around for a bit.
All right. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing? How you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing all right. I hope our little time on your show last week, the people enjoyed it.
Yeah, Chief. You got a unique perspective on the markets. You know, people love the floor talk. You know, the floor has been gone for a long time, but you know, a generation, a couple generations of traders, investors, perspectives on the market. I wish I could shake that bearish mentality of the floor, but I'm still trying to do that. I always appreciate you coming on, and we'll get you back on the schedule soon. What Chief is talking about is the Stock Trader Network, and I know you guys have been listening to me over the years here on Stocks and Jocks, but I also do a pre-market prep show on Pre-Market Prep YouTube. Conflicts with the Chief a little bit, but that's okay. If you guys are done listening to him, you can hop over there. And also, we did something a little bit more dedicated for more active investors called the Stock Trader Network. So check it out, StockTraderNetwork.com. If you're interested in joining it, if you're a little bit more active trader, send me an email, joel@premarketprep.com, and I can hook you up with something. But, Chief, I always appreciate
you. Well, since the market's going
on.
So, since the market's trading, when you guys are doing the show, it's much more market-oriented. It's much more – it's hard to be market-oriented when it's before the opening, right? So,
Well, you're right.
And we do some, but you guys are more into that, and that's fun, and it's educational.
Yeah, you know, opening imbalances, Chief.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I knew you used to pay attention to those. You know, we pay attention to imbalances, news, ratings, you know. It's always fun. Chief, you'll have to take a break one time. You'll have to come on with me during the during like a jobs number or CPI, PPI. You know, I pull up the one-minute S&Ps, and I never look at one-minute S&Ps. And Dennis is a market maker. He goes wide, and we see the reaction to the numbers and stuff. So it's a little – that's on the pre-market prep. That's free from 8 to 9, and, you know, don't want to cut into Chief's time here, but we're on a little bit after that. So anyway, once again, it's Joel at premarketprep.com if you got any questions.
Well, it comes down to what can somebody – you have to. You're talking about a very dedicated person who can trade in the middle of that fray because it's happening so fast. I mean, it was even tough to do that in the floor when it was all happening right there.
You know what, Chief? Though it's you know, and we talk to this a lot about people on our show. It's not necessarily you have to trade.
No.
You have to pull the trigger. It's information.
It's
right?
It's understanding what's going on.
Exactly, and you know the. You know, I go back and forth with Dennis. You know, he's like, who needs the spoos? We have the SPY. And then I'll chime in. Well, the spoos, you know, are open from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. while the SPY's closed. And then, you know, and then there was also, I mean, and this is on rare occasions, really when the markets get out of whack. You know, a lot of times looking at the SPY can give you a different indication. Of course, the spoos are closed between 5 and 6, right?
Yeah.
So the SPY is the king in between them. So a pretty high level look at the market. But, if you want to learn, right, Chief? Aren't we still learning, right?
Without a doubt. Years? Well, I tell you what, this what's happening right now, the new variable of well, there always were people. You know, if you look at the military group, but they never traded that much. I mean, you can say that the influence of the military group, you know, the military industrial complex, as Eisenhower said, you know, was favored by government. That's true, but nobody ever traded that stuff. I mean, I know. I mean, obviously there was a Boeing crowd, there was a Lockheed crowd, I mean, that kind of thing, but nothing like this. Where you know, we have a stock like Oracle that's so widely held, and oh, by the way, it's moving like 5 and 10 and 20% or 30% a day based on what people perceive, you know, the government and them, the marriage. I've never seen anything like that in all my years. This is a totally new variable, and I honestly don't know how to deal with it, other than be careful of it and be careful of short calls and some of this stuff. I mean, it's an unusual place where you see people make. This is not a political comment. You're seeing people making pilgrimages to a guy, essentially, who decided he's going to be something other than a regular president. He's going to be some sort of a, I don't know, we'll call him a dictator, but it's something more than what Jimmy Carter thought the presidential spot would be. I mean, you're going up there and people walk away with, what, Apple walked away with a, they're not going to be counted in the tariffs from China or something, or to get a delay. I mean, that's never happened before. Is open, which isn't to say Boeing didn't get a secret deal or those kinds of things, but Boeing, it was a news item. It wasn't a trade item. This is a trading item. I mean, everybody owns Apple, for
Chief,
God's sake.
Chief, what you're talking about is the flow of information.
Yeah.
And it is, now, come on, what did we used to do? We used to, you know, when I was in the S&P pit, in the middle of the pit or on the side of the pit, you looked up at the little TVs, right?
Yeah.
And it had, what was it, Reuters? Did they have Reuters? Wait,
you had the two tapes. You had the Reuters and what was the other one? The was it UP or not UP? Associated
News
Press.
Wire.
AP.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone used to squint and look at that, you know, and I can even remember when we used to call the S&Ps the open.
Yeah.
Off the T-bond market, you know? If the 30-year bond was up 4 ticks, we're like, hey, we're up a couple handles. If it was up, a half a point, hey, you know, we got a big open here, 5 handles. But, I mean, and now look at, now you have opening price indications and stuff, but I think we're showing our age here, Chief.
Well, remember when the first time somebody could, like, purse the news, if that's even a word, is if you just looked at the tape, the thing just keeps going, right? And if the world got busy, they'd say the news tape was a minute behind, 2 minutes behind, 3 minutes behind. But if you knew how to do it, which all everybody in the crowd, you know, some guys did, I don't know how to do it, you could actually, if you were trading like four stocks, you could filter the news to you'd get your four stocks first, even ahead of the rest of the news. Mm-hmm. So I was in the Owens and Revlon crowd. So there was news on Revlon, and it'd pop up, even though it might have been backed up in the queue on the tape. So what Joel and I, if you're kind of a smart ass, or maybe there's some truth to it, there's three kinds of people in the world. One kind makes things happen. One kind watches what happens, and the rest of the people wonder what happened, right? We're trying to take people out of class B and put them into class, or C into B, where at least you can watch things happen and know what's going on, rather than, we're never going to be in a spot where we're making things happen. I mean, we're not the deal makers, are we? And we're not the Fed, where we can, people aren't going to front run us, Joel, I don't think, are we? We're just trying to educate people into how to pick up what's going on to make them a better trader.
I mean, it's, the investing landscape has changed so much, and will continue to change. Between me and you, we were in the stock market crash of 29, we were in, the crash of 87, we were the tech bubble crash in 2000, 2001, the financial crisis. Things were quiet for a while. COVID, I mean, come on, that just changed the whole market structure, people participation, and who knows what's going to happen.
The thing I think, Joel, and if you can hang 30 more seconds, the thing I think is a much deeper problem, and I'll run this by Kenny, is when the CBOE was invented, they separated principal and agent, which means that the guy who was doing your trades, PTI for instance, or the broker on the floor, could not take the other side of that trade. That our job was to execute for you the best we could. That has all changed since the exchanges have gone away. So your order flow gets shopped by people, and people know it's coming. So the people who they essentially buy the order flow, they see the stuff coming. So it's not like you have a huge public market sitting there. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But all of a sudden, you see this after the close when there's an earnings announcement. The people, quote, making the markets are going to see the orders coming to them before they get there, which it never used to happen when there was a separation. So you're going to see a stock that maybe has good earnings or perceived good earnings. All of a sudden, every offer disappears, right? It's just gone. And what you say, why is that stock up 10%? Because somebody pulled every offer along the way. There's no New York specialist where you go to and say, okay, where can I buy a million shares? And say, are we going to take out the people at an eighth, a quarter, three-eighths, a half? You can buy it at five-eighths, and everybody gets filled at five-eighths. That sort of decency is totally gone. If you see this stuff coming, which you do, because that's what you get for paying for order flow, you get out of the way, right, Joel? We were never able to do that.
I'll just say, we could draw a lot of parallels between the four, but being on the floor, being on a clerk in the S&P pit, I tell you right now, when Goldman put in a 500 lot or a 1,000 lot or Shycorp or Cargill or something, there was a flow of information there, Chief, yeah. And it was to get the hell out of the way.
But now you can't. It's much easier to steal electronically. As much as FINRA says they got it all figured out, they don't.
Yeah.
It's much easier to steal when you can't see the whites of somebody's eyes.
Yep. All right, Chief.
All right, buddy.
We didn't even talk Michigan football. That's okay. Next week, go Blue.
Well, you guys got to play a Patsy, right?
We did, Satchel. Big game at Nebraska. I hate to put too much emphasis on early season games, but this is a big game. We win this game. We got Washington, Michigan State. We got some games in there. Big game at USC, and then we all know what is going to come to Michigan, Ohio State.
Yep.
All right, Chief. All right. Talk to you next week.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do, Chief.
Kenny, how are you?
I have an 8 o'clock hard stop. I hate to tell you, but I have an 8 o'clock hard stop.
Okay. Good.
All right.
That means you got something good to do, bud.
Yeah, so what's going on?
So what are you? You gotta enter the Oval Office at 8 or what?
I got news for you. I have no interest in the Oval Office, the White House, none of it, zero, none of it.
Well, good, because I hear they canceled all visits or something.
I'm happy to do what I do, minding my own business in North Palm Beach, happy as a clam.
There you go. So you guys are, there's another hurricane. It's going out in the Atlantic. So you guys are.
I don't know. I haven't heard one that's coming this way. The ones that have kind of developed all season have turned away from us and not hit the East or West Coast. So that's good. And we're all now, you know, we're now halfway through September, so we are winding down. Even though this might be the height of the season, it doesn't look like there's a lot brewing out there. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we're gonna make this season with, you know, little to nothing happening.
But the somehow or another, we're not talking about the weather show. The neutrality in the El Nino versus La Nina is causing a lot of this stuff, and it's supposedly going to cause a really snowy winter for us. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but maybe it will. Who knows?
Well, you know, listen, it hasn't snowed. I don't know if it snowed in Chicago a lot last year, but the East Coast, like New York, Boston, they have not gotten a lot of snow over the last couple of years. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think they didn't have much of any in New York.
Yeah, I think that's all part of this. Well, now this year, Carl says it's the same pattern as with 79, where we threw Blandick out of office because we had so much snow. I don't want to go through that again. That was awful.
Yeah, do you remember that?
Forget it? Anyway, so what do you make of we're going to go up there. Have you seen in recent memory this big of a string of mutual fund buying every friggin' day?
I have not. It's odd to me that you look at the charts, it's straight up. I mean, could these mutual funds have been so underinvested all summer long? Were they, maybe they were waiting for that, you know, August, September pullback, which never came. And then they're sitting there realizing, okay, we only got 3 months and now we have to hurry up because a lot of the mutual funds actually close their books in October. So they got to get their stuff in position. So that's the only thing I can think about is that they're all sitting there waiting, waiting and waiting for the crash that never came. And so now they're forced to have to do something. So
I don't think those guys, well, whatever, you know those guys more than me. I don't think any of them think like that at all. I think if at the end of the day you've got checks to put in the Vanguard S&P 500 fund, you buy it.
And that just goes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. All right, so maybe, you know, listen, a lot of that could then be investors themselves that waited, didn't do anything, and now, to your point, they're throwing in the towel, just sending in the check saying, just buy it. But one way or the other, again, you know me, I feel like we're way stretched. If I thought we were stretched at 6,500, we're even more stretched at 6,615, which is where we closed last night.
Well, right? If that article was stretched at 230, how do you like it at 320?
Yeah. Do you realize we've traded as low as 4,834 to 6,615 as of last night, right? This whole year. The 4,834 was the low in April? After the Liberation Day to, you know, where we are today. And basically, since April, it's done nothing but go up in a straight line. It hasn't even, I don't think we've had a 5% pullback.
Kenny, just for bleeps and giggles, how big do you think the bias is, when I say the bias to the upside, if people are just neutral? I'm going to say that how many million people in this country have contributions to 401ks, and they're in whatever, especially somebody who's younger. I mean, of course, it never, doesn't really change. People get older these days. They don't ever think the market's going down. But how many, every day or every other Friday, for instance, say it's payday.
Every 15th and 30th.
How much money, if there isn't a corresponding people that say, this is too high, we're going to sell, every other Friday, how many, you know, how many
millions and trillions go into 401k? You're right. But there are people that may have redirected their contribution because they don't want to stop making their contribution. They redirect it just to hold it in their cash account. They may not have been continuing to add into their.
I'm gonna go with, you know, 1 out of 100.
Okay, well, and I would agree with you. I don't think people are that. I think a lot of people, they just put it on autopilot and they let go, right? They just I talk to people all day long who say, oh, I don't even know what it's invested in. What do you mean you don't know?
All they care about is it's going up.
Right, that's all they care about, it's going up. And then when it starts to go down, they'll all be screaming.
Well,
right?
They listen to TV saying, don't be an idiot and sell out. They don't open their statements for 2 months and it goes back up.
Right.
For how many years? 2 decades. I mean, right? That's where we're at.
Yeah, that's where we're at. Yeah, no, that's where we're at. And I put it in my note this morning that it reminds me of that John Keynes, you know, famous line that the market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent, meaning, you know, it's irrational at times. And it can remain irrational longer than maybe you and I think it should. But that, and that's what it feels like right now, because when I look at the chart on the S&P, it's just in a straight line. I mean, it's broken all trend lines. It continues to break all trend lines. I keep trying to draw a new one, and it breaks through it to the upside. I draw another one, it breaks through it to the upside. And so, you know, at some point, you got to just let it run. I'm not chasing it. I'm not chasing, especially the names that have gotten beat up. Opportunities in healthcare, for sure, because that's actually down on the year. Healthcare, it's actually flat on the year right now. It's basically flat. But, you know, there's opportunity in energy. It's only up 3% on the year. There's opportunity in consumer staples. I know those aren't sexy names, but they're names that have been way underperforming the market versus names that are way outperforming the market. So if you want to continue to put money away, there is opportunity out there in terms of, you know, if you're just going to play sectors. So there is. It doesn't mean, you know, you should go chasing, you should go all in and start just chasing everything that moves, like NVIDIA and Oracle and all that stuff. I think you have to be very careful with those names. If you own them, great. And we own them, great. I'm not buying any more personally up here, and the firm's not buying any more up here at the moment. We're looking for other places, whether it's small and mid caps, whether it's those sectors that I say that are underperforming, but there is opportunity.
Well, on the one hand, and I've been trying to open this discussion with a lot of my guys, I know you got a hard stop here, but we have a couple of minutes. When you look at stuff like you just said, these things are stretched, they look here, they look there, and you and I look at it from our experience and say it's somewhat irrational. I mean, it doesn't make any sense that anything is valued like this much. It makes a lot of sense if it's a small company and they're growing like a weed and they got something, and you can almost sense how good they're going to do. If it's a really big company, you sit there and go, how the hell are they going to double? I mean, if they double, they're going to be the entire world, basically.
Yes.
But now, Wayne was on last Thursday, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen, and I go, and Oracle just made his move. And I go, Wayne, what is your feel on this? He goes, it's easy. Ellison's kid and Trump's kid are two peas in the pot. They're going to get every one of these contracts for all this, almost secrets, you know, secret police kind of crap for everybody's all the, you know, everybody's face recognition cameras, all the kind of stuff that we're starting to do in society. They're going to get the lion's share of that business because they're that tight with Trump's kid. Now that's something, or he's right or wrong, you and I never considered 20 years ago. I mean, there's reasons why. I mean, you can look at Apple, and I know it's one of your favorites. Look at it and say, it looks like a company that's making some good dough. It doesn't look like something's going to double because they don't seem to have the innovation they used to have. Yet, that guy walks out of the Oval Office with some kind of a, what's his deal? He doesn't have to pay as much tariffs as everybody else in China. The favoritism towards the top 7 or 10 or anybody who has access, I mean, it's always sort of been there, Kenny. I was just mentioning it with Carl. It was always kind of been there. I mean, with like Boeing and stuff. But we never traded Boeing. Boeing was never a big trader. Nobody cared, right? I mean, you cared, I guess. But these are stocks that are big-time traders that are somehow getting this little edge. Maybe there's a reason why they're this expensive that you and I are missing.
Well, they're getting this edge because they have the ability to, you know, in Apple's case, let's just use Apple. They have the ability to come here, set up manufacturing, create thousands of new jobs, right, as do a lot of the other ones that they're making deals with. And I think at some point we had to bring, I don't think he's wrong bringing manufacturing back to this country at all. I don't think, right, we became too dependent on, you know, supply chains in Asia, which I thought was way, had gotten way out of line. So I think when they make deals with someone like Apple, who has the ability to really come here and make a difference, I'm not sure I necessarily disagree with that. I think you have to, you know, there's got to be an incentive for them to want to come back here, I guess.
Right. So I mean, why?
That's what they're doing.
But you know, the whole part is we only got a couple minutes, but we had a long debate on the capitalism versus socialism because Gallup just came out with that poll.
Yeah.
About how a lot of younger people are trending towards, you know, thinking that socialism is more favorable and capitalism is less. And I of course I looked at the poll, and we used to do stuff on polls in grad school. First of all, it's a horse bleep poll.
Yeah.
Because the people you're asking probably can't define either one of them. So that's a problem.
Right.
But I think what you're sensing from people is they don't know exactly what we have, but it doesn't look so hot. It's turning into crony capitalism, whatever you want to talk about it. It's not competitive on any stretch. I mean, we're trying to figure out a way to bring Apple back here. We're not trying to get a competitor, are we? We're not trying to give a lot of money to Motorola to compete with Apple.
No, we're not. We're not.
We're essentially saying that the top 20 names, you're going to be the top 20 for the next five centuries. What can we do to make you do what we want you to do? Well, that's right. A whole different world than your and my view of capitalism. I mean,
I hear you. I get it. But I think you have to. I think you have to understand where we are, right, in the economy, where we're with these businesses, what they're going to do to the economy, what they're going to do to the global economy, where they stand, and we want to be a part of it. We want to be a part of it that, you know, we're not just depending on. We want to be where it happens.
We know where we want to go, but then we're going to bring a battery plant over here, and then we're going to raid the place, right? do we have any idea? Does the left hand know what the right hand's doing there?
No, probably not. Does the left hand ever know what the right hand's doing?
Well, you hope once in a while.
Yeah, every once in a while.
So are you on a plane, or what are you doing? You're on some.
No, I'm in Florida. I just have a client meeting at 8 o'clock.
All right, buddy,
jump on.
Go get him.
All right, talk to you.
SP futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up 53. Why don't we go on a 30-second break, and then we'll bring back Professor Hill.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Well, we're back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Hal Rickey on the board. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 53. We're up every day. Just every day our clients have more money, so I guess it's been fun for us. I mean, it's been fun for guys like Hal. You know, $3 billion in the market. He just watches it go up every day and counts it up every day. You know, the only problem a guy like Hal has is he used to walk into a bar and he'd light up a cigarette with a $100 bill, or light up his cigar with a $100 bill, but now a $100 bill means nothing, and there's not a $200 bill. So you've lost all influence.
I think you have me confused with a different Hal.
I mean, this is really money for nothing.
I agree with that, definitely, yeah.
Except for the part where whenever I go into Myers every Monday morning, I see the people looking at every price and using coupons. This is reminding me so much of what I read about for the 20s. It's scary. Yeah. But what am I going to do about it? Nothing. Hell, except talk about it and hope people at least are aware of it.
A lot of it's just coming from lending, right? And I think most of that new money is being created, like we mentioned last week, I think most of that new money is being created in these margin loans. Right?
Well, you know, in
margin lending is, I mean, what Carl said last week, I think it was, about how there's a lot of margin loans that is kind of like off books. So the amount that we see in the data from FINRA, that, you know, topping $1 trillion in the last two prints,
yeah,
that's little compared to what it actually is. So. I think that's where the money's going, and it's the Cantillon effect.
Where do you think the I'm going to put here U.S. margin debt, but keep talking. Where do you think a lot of like the Bitcoin leverage is? Where do you think that is?
I think that leverage is coming from a lot of different places because, you know, if you want to buy Bitcoin, you can buy it. You can buy it with a credit card, so there's nothing.
The real debt. I mean, if somebody wants to buy, you know, a Bitcoin at $100,000, you're not going to get that on your credit card.
Well, no, but I think there are small retail buyers that are buying Bitcoin with their paychecks. I think they're buying it with credit cards.
Boy, August, I got us at $1.059 trillion in security. That's as high as it's ever been, right? Boy, it's really shot up here. Man, it actually was going down for a while. Now, in the last few months, it's just going to the moon. You look at we were 937 in January, and then 918, 880, 850. And look at this, 920, trillion 7, trillion 22, trillion 59.
Wow.
You mentioned that you're more correct than what you thought, my friend.
Yeah.
I mean, what a trend. We're up $200 billion, for God's sake, well, in 3 months.
There's interesting trends out there. You know, you look at business loans. Business loans are starting to accelerate. If you annualize it between February and now, it's up 7%, business loans. And it was pretty much flat from January 2023 to 2024. But then you look at residential loans. Residential loans seem to be slowing. And then you look at consumer loans. Consumer loan trend is slower than it was. So it's just kind of like, I think what we see here is this Cantillon effect, where people who get the money, the printed money first, benefit because prices haven't gone up yet. They use this leverage to buy these uninflated assets. And then by the time that chunk of money gets to the consumer, all the prices have gone up. So I think what we're witnessing is the Cantillon effect. And I think economics departments throughout the United States need to scrap the quantity theory money. I think the quantity theory money is great, but it only tells you the entry point and the exit point. It doesn't have anything to say on what happens between when that money enters.
You see some shifts, but just real simply on the margin part, for everybody that doesn't, I suspect, well, very few. We're blessed, Hal. It's not like some of our, that we don't have people that have, you know, margin debt. We do, but we really don't have anybody, I won't say anybody, but we don't have anybody who, you know, one of our biggest holdings, that we've been really successful in this year. Now, last year didn't move very much, but this year we've got, like, just to show you how this works. Say the GDX started the year at 35, roughly, which is the gold miners index, and we got a lot of people in this. You know, they, between us, that was a decision we made. I just didn't pour it in there for them. If you want to buy 1,000 shares beginning of the year, it was $35,000. Again, I don't have anybody like this where they'd send me a check for $17,500. Okay, that's the minimum you can put down. That's 50% margin, and that happens all over the place. And all these, you know, electronic firms, I mean, that's where they make virtually all their money, is on margin debt, not on the commissions, not anything else. They make it on you paying them for margin. And most people don't realize that, but clearing firms make money on the interest, not on the commissions. Anyway, so now that's 70. So it's doubled this year. It's been a spectacular year for people that are in there. Now, okay, you now have $70,000 of net lick, correct?
Yeah.
Your debt now is only $17,500. And so now you actually now have $17,500 of buying power, up to $35,000, where you can buy either more of this or buy something else. And now
you can continue the leverage, right?
Yeah, so then your debt, your equity would be $70,000. Well, whatever you bought of something else, you could go buy another $35,000 worth.
Man, if those market prices keep rising,
yeah, well, that's what,
keep leveraging, prices go higher, you keep leveraging.
Yep.
It's a house of cards.
Well, it especially is crazier on the, and again, I say this once in a time.
It looks like a house, but it's just a house of cards that can topple over really quickly.
But this is one thing I probably say too often, but I can't say it often enough, because this is how this works. Before 1929, if you bought something for 100 and you sent in 50, and it went down to 99, you owed $500 that night.
Yeah.
The same way it is in the futures markets. That's why when you're talking about leverage, it makes a big difference in how this leverage happens. Because after the 29 crash, the Fed, who dictates margins on this, the initial margin's 50, your maintenance margin's only 30. So if you would have bought the GDX, like I talked about, at 35, sent me a check for $17,500, me, not personally, obviously, and it dropped, say, $5, I didn't have to make a phone call, or my brother, or whoever, we didn't have to make a phone call. So now it's back up to 70, and you think, you know, back to 70, and you think everything was cool. But in the old days, you would have had to send me a check for another $5,000.
Yeah.
And but now we don't do that. But now the other thing you that you're talking
rule,
about.
I mean, the rule's intended to.
It's intended to buffer. Like it's a buffer.
Preserve order, right?
Yes, it's a buffer. And
you think it creates a little bit of a moral hazard?
Without a doubt. But on the future side, if you call us up, we do this, by the way. If you call and say, I want to buy a soybean contract, it might be $1,000 or $2,000. It's so long since I've done that. We can still do it. If you lose $1,000 that day, hey, Hal, where's my check for a G, big guy? The trick is the other way. If the margin on the soybeans is $2,000, and the soybeans goes up, so now you've got $4,000 worth of equity, you can buy another soybean contract.
That's like that.
Yeah.
To me, it's just like playing, blackjack or something in Vegas. I mean, just keep slapping it down. You think lucky streak's going to keep going. And, Metallica says this. Eventually the luck runs out,
game theory says your biggest bet should be your last bet. But the weird part of all this is if you don't know who the players are with the margin, you don't know who affects somebody else. And that's what ends up happening during the 2008 fiasco with all the credit default swaps and those things, where people were insuring other people, and there was no central exchange.
Yeah.
To where all these... And then there was a big hue and cry to put this on the exchanges. And some of the exchanges, like ICE and a few others, said, we'll put it on the exchange, so it was, at least it's transparent and people know the deal. That one went on for about 6 months, and, it dissipated like a fart in a hurricane. None of that stuff's on the exchanges. It's back where it was before. Now, it's not as big of an issue, but you don't even know where the I think the biggest, I'm kind of talking for you, Hal, it's not just the margin. It's the margin you don't know about. Where is some of this? Some of the 2008 stuff happened, a couple of the banks that got clobbered the worst were a couple of banks in Germany, and I thought Germany had a complicated or a consolidated banking system. There were a couple of small banks that got absolutely reamed. I never heard their names. I mean, I thought it was all Dresdner and Deutsche Bank and those guys in Frankfurt, and all of a sudden there's all these little guys. And any one of these little people can cause a problem, like Silicon Valley, right? I mean, any place you don't know where there's leverage, where there's margin. I mean, Nancy talked about doing second mortgages for people, even though their mortgage was at 3% and the new mortgage is at 6.5%. Because they had to consolidate their credit cards, which were 25.
Yeah.
I won't say you, because you're a professor.
Better than 24.
Yeah, so you can do the math. Okay, if I owe 50 on my mortgage, 30 on my credit cards, okay, I'm going to go from 3.5 to 6.5, but I'm coming down from 25. I think the math works pretty well, right?
Yeah.
There's obviously a break-even number in there that we could do. Hell, easier than me. But the... Again, all this stuff is kind of happening, Hal, and as long as things are going up, everything's all right,
Well, the Fed's got to keep it going because the moral hazard we mentioned with the rule change and the margin debt, in the old rule, you wouldn't be as reckless. You wouldn't be willing to take on as much risk because you knew that if it went down, you'd have to write a check. Now, there's a buffer, so
right.
You don't have to write the check.
Well, but this buffer's been around since 1932. It's not new.
Yeah. You're more likely to keep it on the table and keep it going. So the Fed now has to find a way to keep this whole thing going, because once that crack begins, it's going to really be devastating. I think
if they had the
interest on reserves, the way they manage the reserves now, by encouraging more reserves, by raising the interest they pay on those reserves, I think what they've created is a really bad anti-capitalistic system. Capitalism, to all those people who said they prefer socialism, capitalism, the capitalism that they think is capitalism is not capitalism.
Right.
Capitalism is the free exchange of goods, services, and ideas without any government intervention at all. What we have is anti-capitalistic. The Federal Reserve is not a capitalistic institution.
No, without a doubt.
It's not at all. It has nothing to do with free markets.
But how many?
It is a central planning organization. Is the Politburo.
Can I ask you a professorial question about that survey? We're talking about the Gallup survey of people, capitalism versus socialism. We did for a couple of weeks in one of our classes in grad school, we were designing surveys, and how if you and I did it right, we could have a survey about if we asked people a question right, people
you
would
get
say
any response people, you want,
yeah, yeah, people would say they really did want to go to hell if you did it properly. But now when people some guys like Carl are all bent out of shape that people are preferring socialism. And my view of this is it's capitalism. You could have used Halism instead of socialism, and people are just recoiling from what they see our capitalism looking like and are favoring any other system. It doesn't even matter what the name is.
If you define capitalism as the free exchange of goods, services, and ideas,
we are not it.
I think people would prefer that.
Yeah.
But people see capitalism as the billionaire with a top hat, tails, and a cane, and smoking a big cigar, with the government in a leash as their dog. That's what people view capitalism is. It's completely opposite. So when these pollsters ask people what system do they prefer, it's almost like we're conflating what capitalism is in reality versus what it's become in our very neo-mercantilist.
You could replace the word socialism in that poll with any word you wanted, and people would have preferred it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because capitalism is conflated with neo-mercantilism. Mercantilism is where the government creates these monopolies because the king needs revenues. So the king says, I'll give you a monopoly with this patent or permission, this license, but you have to collect the taxes on my behalf. That's mercantilism. And that's the system we have. We have, the government has created all these cartelizing tools.
Is mercantilism synonymous with crony capitalism pretty much?
What's that?
Is it synonymous with crony capitalism pretty much?
Well, I think you could call neo-mercantilism crony capitalism, yeah. You could call it state capitalism.
Yeah.
Right? You can't. Yeah. I think they're all interchangeable. Capitalism is the free exchange of goods, services, and ideas. And without any government intervention, those free exchanges of goods, services, and ideas,
I would say it's with limited.
And it's the tide that lifts all
boats. I would say with limited,
all boats are lifted.
With limited government intervention, because there needs to be a couple of rules of play, but limited.
Well, yeah, I think maybe enforcing property rights.
But how do you, right now, and everybody's going to say, God, he's going to do a liberal rant here. But we have a situation right now, in my opinion, where we have a government that's stone cold broke, okay? And they're borrowing money people as fast as they can. And the motivation is to pay that money back someday with money that's worth a lot less than where you borrowed it, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest benefactor from inflation is the government. And on top of that...
And the people that touched up.
Well, and on top of that, you have a person who's now running the government. And, I'm not saying there are any good ideas or anything, that is essentially a landowner, for lack of a better term. He owns the Doral and other places. The biggest thing that could happen to him, just like Weimar Republic, is for the value of the dollar to go down to half and the room rates to double. Because now the mortgage on a Doral is nothing, right, compared to what he's making? I mean, how many people in Germany do you think, when they started the inflation by the Weimar, the farmers loved it because they could pay off their mortgages in like 2 months, right?
Yeah,
how many of the biggest farmers in Germany to this day got those farms during the Weimar Republic? Yeah. I'll bet.
I'm not sure if this is intentional, but I think those lessons, whether intentional or not, I think those lessons were kind of learned.
Yeah.
And so people know how they can inflate, how they can get the government to inflate the currency to create an inflation that really benefits one small, tiny group of people.
Well,
the Cantillon effect is the perfect model.
But to be fair, Hal, the group is a lot bigger now. In 1929, only 7% of the people owned stock. Now it's
none of them ever mentioned Cantillon. They always talk about money in terms of the quantity theory of money.
But now you can. How many people own stock? I could probably. You know what, Ricky? How about Googling that? How many people in the country owns? I'll bet it's.
Directly or indirectly?
Yeah,
are you talking about directly and indirectly?
Yeah, but it's got to be over 50. So I mean,
Definitely, because they have, we don't have pensions anymore, right?
We
have 401k. Yeah. So I think anybody that has a 401k is going to own stock,
yeah,
right?
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, if you walk into any bar in the country tonight and the Fed does something that drives the market up 5% and it's going to drive inflation up 5%, most of the people in there are going to say that good job.
Yeah.
Right? Unless you're going to a, you know, unless you go to a bar in rural Mississippi where nobody owns a share. I mean, here people are going to cheer it, right? They're not unhappy with this. The Senate's not unhappy with this. They're not going to pull the plug on it. Yet no. Some poor guy who's actually got his money in the bank, that's a problem. What do you make of, you watch this, you and Hal probably more than, or you and Carl more, when you talk about the Fed putting money in the system right now, and you did that work a few weeks ago, they're not really, this is the weird part, Hal, their balance sheet's going down.
Yeah.
So the money is growing.
They're just letting the bonds mature.
Yeah, but right? the money is growing so fast on its own because of what you talked about earlier, this margin debt and other debt. They're essentially retarding it a little bit, but not enough.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to retard it a lot more, right? Because,
well, they're just letting these bonds mature.
Yeah.
But loans are being made. And when a loan is made, it doesn't go under somebody's mattress. It ends in a checking account of some sort. So if you take a loan out to buy a car, the guy you buy the car from is going to deposit that check from the bank, which came from a loan, into his checking account. So all this money ends up back in the banking system.
All right, let me walk through that real quick in case anybody, we do this every once in a while. Hal goes, we'll go back to Bonanza on TV. Hal goes in and borrows $200 to buy a horse, right? He goes and buys the horse from the livery stable. The livery stable puts the $200 in their account. Now all of a sudden, there's $200 more in the whole system, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And that's how money grows. When you say how does money grow, we grow it.
And there's no reserve requirement anymore.
Would you support? Boy, this would be a fart in church. Would you support right now, considering what's happening? Considering there is some people are concerned about inflation. None of the big people are. Because nobody cares if their Oracle stock inflates, right? They're richer. Would you support raising like the margin, initial margin to 55 cents, 55% or 60 since the market is going up every day like this? Or would you support banks all of a sudden having a 10% reserve requirement or 20 like they used to? I would.
Well, I personally, we have to consider drastic changes because the system that we currently have, whether it's managed by Republicans or Democrats, is really only working for a very small group of people. And the current system, again, managed by Democrats or Republicans, no matter, is what's driving the gap between the wealthy and everybody else. That's the system that's doing it. So we have to rethink this whole thing. I don't know if the
Fed... Why do we have to rethink it? The guys are doing it now, have bought all the news outlets. They're going to control the news, too.
I'm still saying, this system has been in place for at least 20 years. Yes. This current regime has been in place for 20 years. And I don't care if it's got an R behind it or a D behind it.
When would you say it started? I have a particular date in mind.
Well, I kind of think it really got out of control when the Federal Reserve and Congress got together and they did their bailout of Wall Street in 2000. That's when it really got out of control.
I would go back. I would agree with that, but I also would go back to 2000 when they put all kinds of money in the system for Y2K.
Mike Munger, the chair of the political science department, I think, at Duke, he had it starting around 1997 where the housing bubble really started to accelerate. That's
okay, right about in there. Well, because a lot of that money went into the dot-com, dot-bomb, and in some of the housing. And then at the end of 2000, they pulled a little bit of it back, which cut the market
down. 2003 is when the federal funds rate got really low. It had never been down to the 1%.
It was Greenspan, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Greenspan, yeah.
But yeah,
I don't know if you know this, but Greenspan in like 2003... when he had the federal funds rate at an all-time low of 1%, he was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, telling all these credit unions to make adjustable rate mortgages. Now, let me ask you a question. If you're a credit union and the Fed's got interest rates at now all-time lows, and you start making adjustable rate mortgages, which way are interest rates going?
Going up, obviously.
Yeah, so was that intended to kill off the credit unions? I mean, he was begging them, demanding that they make adjustable rate mortgages.
Uh-oh, you know what you're doing now when you say that.
Yeah. Engaging in a conspiracy theory.
No, you're piling on to my favorite conspiracy theory that Volcker intentionally put the savings and loans out of business.
Oh, yeah. I think we've talked about this before, and I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
So, yeah, well, anybody who competes with the current, with the banks, anybody, I think there's a law in the books about what percentage of deposits, now deposits are liabilities to banks or assets to you, what percentage of the deposits in the country can be in one bank. And I think we have two or three banks that have exceeded that for, what, two decades, and nothing ever happens to them.
Yeah, the laws don't apply to them.
No, they don't apply to them.
And that's one of the problems we have, is we have to have a
system. That's why I fight with Carl all the time.
The laws are equally applied to everybody.
Yeah, that's where I fight with Carl all the time. He keeps piling up with these laws. Mm-hmm. And, on one hand, it's a very brilliant thing because he puts this stuff up that nobody knows about. And the other, you're like Barney Fife. Nobody wants to listen to you.
Yeah.
Which is because if why should the laws apply to me? And all you have to do is drive around now. The whole society feels like that. Wait a minute. This guy was in front of me too long. I should have gone through the red light. That way I can go through this red light. It doesn't apply to me. I should have been able to go through that one.
Yeah, when you stop enforcing the law for a small group of people and people observe that, they're like, well, that guy doesn't have to obey the law. I don't have to obey the law.
I got pulled over for a traffic thing tomorrow, I mean, I'm the calmest man that ever walked. I'd be so pissed.
Yeah.
The first thing I would say is, why me? Because I'm an old white guy and I'm safe? I mean, I would hope I wouldn't say that to somebody's face, but that's exactly why me.
Would you? Yeah.
Why me?
Well, there in San Francisco, they let you steal up to, like, I don't know, $950 worth of goods before they call the cops. But the cops will bust a dude for eating a breakfast sandwich.
Yeah, yeah.
On the BART platform, because the guy waiting at 6 a.m. for the BART train is going to work, and he can pay the fine.
Yeah.
That is really crazy.
We don't as the guy in the trading floor once said, we don't know where we're going, but we're on our way and we're almost there.
Yeah.
I mean, is anybody, this is the latest thing. I mean, I don't think anybody gives a crap about
it. Well, I think the overall theme here is division.
Well, right? Did you see the guy that just...
divisions to get us hating each other, and these divisions are the things that are the source of political power. For people who are greedy.
What about the guy, the latest addition to the Fed? Is a Trump flunky. He's gonna be a part-time governor. What is that?
Well, I think
that's a problem?
Well, the term's till January. I think there was an early resignation, so it's a 4-month appointment.
You don't think he's gonna be reappointed?
If you look at his credentials, I mean, setting aside all talking points, I mean, you look at his credentials, he's got a PhD from Harvard. And when you're a PhD from Harvard, you're a pretty smart dude. Because
I didn't say, I never
PhD
once said he was an idiot. I said he can't.
I know. What I'm saying is, those guys are pretty smart. They may be too smart for themselves, but you look at their candidates.
All right.
They're all these, like, highly credentialed math geniuses that have master's degrees in engineering.
I'm not going to go down that road that anybody with a PhD from Harvard's a genius, because the Unabomber
really
was
mathematically.
All right, the Unabomber was great mathematically too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
No, my point is...
And a lot of times a PhD means you're an expert in a very, very tiny corner of knowledge. And you're not very smart outside that tiny corner.
There was a time where if you looked at most of the people in this country that had a brain cell working, and you said, okay, who's going to be appointed for a Fed governor? This is a spot where there's supposed to be an independent agency. Yeah. Who should be a Fed governor? They're going to go down the list... It could very well be a guy like you. Here's a guy who's...
Oh, I'll never get a nomination
saying,
my PhD
but
in Washington.
I know that. But I'm saying it should... But let's go find somebody who's written a lot about monetary theory, that's something like this. By the way, maybe he's a professor someplace. Maybe he worked for some firm and actually knows how trading goes. But let's find somebody in their 60s or whatever that is going to be a Fed governor and is going to be independent. And when we're going to put them on there, and everybody's going to look at them and say, God, where'd you find this guy or lady? They're perfect.
Tom, I don't think any of the Fed governors nominated by a Democrat or Republican are independent.
Oh,
I don't think any of them are. I think the ones that are currently on there that were appointed by Biden are loyal to that side of the political aisle, and I think the ones that are nominated by a Republican president are loyal to that side of the argument.
We're not talking about Supreme Court judges.
I don't think
judges.
Any of these guys are independent.
Nobody's ever totally independent in anything. We know that.
Yeah, they're
not. But the point being is,
the ones that are nominated by Democrats, they share their worldview. The ones that are nominated by Republicans, they share Republicans' worldview. So by definition, they're not independent.
So what I'm trying to make a point here, and obviously you're disagreeing with me, is that there's some sense of priority. I know that whoever somebody, I actually, by being sort of in the middle, think I would find somebody who was independent. Okay, but let's say I'm one of the only people in the world that really wants to do that. But still, you're going to get somebody whose resume, everybody, by the way, Powell is a Trump appointee, right? Would you say he's got the Trump's worldview?
Well, I think he was nominated by Trump.
All right. Does he share Trump's worldview?
Then if you ask me where is his biases lie?
Right, what I'm saying.
Some of it is a matter of degree, you know. The reason why I say that, Tom, if you remember the 2018 midterm election, he raised pretty aggressively the federal funds rate right before the election. It caused the stock market to drop 20%, which gave
Ricky, did you cut him off because of his views?
No, I think he's just cutting off a little bit.
And then last. Oh, sorry, I'm getting cut off.
Yeah, you're cutting yourself off.
You guys hear me?
Or is that the CIA doing it for you? Or is that the ICE cutting you off?
Oh.
We're hearing like every other word, Al. What are you doing to yourself?
Maybe the national security. And if you think the Fed is politically independent and you value it, and you just looked at it from the data, and I have this chart that I created on Fred.
I'm not doing this to you, listeners. I'm not doing this to you on purpose. What are you doing on your end?
You're coming. 10 treasuries.
You're coming in every other word. We can't hear you.
Oh, I am. Let me change my Wi-Fi.
Why don't we go to break and you reestablish? Why don't we do that? SP Futures up 8. As if you're up 43.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher, it may not, it could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the phone. Hopefully Ice didn't silence Hal permanently. We should get him back. SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 45. I think we're getting to that stage, Hal. I think they're listening, so careful. You and Carl, for God's sake. Carl,
is
more
it
than
better?
Hey, you're better. Over in Europe, we've got the they're down a little bit, but now U.S.-China talk. DAX down 164.7. It's more than a little bit. FTSE down 30.3%. That's a little bit. CAC around down 10. That's a real little bit, 0.1%. So down, but not very much over in Europe. Maybe DAX a little bit. We're in Asia. We've got the we've got the computer being slow, but we have individual stocks. Not much going anywhere. McDonald's up $1.40. Amazon up $1.87. Of course, Oracle's up another $13. That's another 4%. Nikkei up 134. Those guys did not trade yesterday, so this is a two-day deal. It was old people's day over there. Hey, I don't know if you knew that or not. They actually honor their old people over there. Here we kick them to the curb. Hang down eight.
Well, we don't. My family doesn't.
A lot of families don't, but in general, we try to. Shanghai up one. Call that one flat. And, you know, the older we get, we don't want to be the people kicked at a curb. We never really did we? 10-year up 3 basis points, 4.06. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.71. We've got oil, which has been right around 63. Guess what? It's 63.92, kind of at the higher end of the range. We'll see. Russia, we got Russia supply issues, and, you know, who knows what's going on there. Brent up 50 cents, 67.94. All we know is that the oil market has been amazingly quiet. Gold up $11, 37.30. Wow. Record highs as dollar dips. Now, is gold really up or is the dollar really down? It's the same trade. Silver up 32 cents, 43.29. I'm just sitting along in those gold and silver for my people and have this whole year. It's been a spectacular year. Now, the question is, I'm going to have to ask Hal when we're done, how much higher is this going to go or should I call it a day? I don't know. Dollar slides. Euro's at 118. Hasn't been there in a while. It was in the 115s 2-3 weeks ago. I keep saying 2% in a currency is a massive move. The pound, 136.3, it was under 135. That hasn't moved as much, but 2% is like 20% in the market. Well, maybe not 20, but 15. Crypto, Bitcoin up $1.19. That's 115, 439. Ricky, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. We got 65 degrees right now with a high of 78. Warm with plenty of sunshine today. Tonight will be clear with a low of 65 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 82 right now with a high of 106. Same thing as Chicago, hot with plenty of sunshine. But there is also caution if you're outside for too long. Tonight will be partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 84 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 33 minutes. We're looking at 54 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Howard from Wall, 58 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 37 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 51 minutes. Let's talk baseball real quick. Cubs beat Pirates yesterday, but the White Sox lose to Orioles 4-1. Cubs beat Pirates 4-0. Diamondbacks beat Giants 8-1. And today we got back-to-back games. We got Cubs at Pirates, 5:40 p.m. Orioles at White Sox, 5:40 p.m. And lastly, Giants at Diamondbacks, 8:40 p.m. Back to you guys.
Are you speaking well now, Hal, or did they cut you off?
Check.
You're doing good. We do these. We've been forced to do a lot of this lately, and a lot of it is because of the person we have in office who pushes every rule. It's one thing for you to say everybody's put on the Federal Reserve Board is put there because they have. They think sort of like the president who's in office. I mean, I'm never going to debate you on that. But somehow when you go from there, what if you put one of the triplets in there?
They're going to do the opposite of me.
Well that could be. But I'm saying, how far can we go on this? Now all of a sudden it's not even a
Tom,
full...
Tom, I have no influence on what my kids think.
But I'm saying, now it's become a part-time job. Yeah. Right, because the guy's not leaving his job at the White House, so in now if he's successful in firing this other lady, now what's his kid's name? He's going to be the next guy in there, right? I mean, what are we doing? I mean, are we not even having an appearance of any kind of independence?
Well, I think what's going on here is it's, you know, the term is only till January.
Yeah, and then he gets up. All right, you're saying he's not going
to
re-up.
And the nominees that he puts up are really difficult to get through. I think he barely
this guy got through last night.
Well, I mean, it was like 47-44. I mean, it was crazy tight.
What do you got in?
I think there's 47 Democrats that voted against him.
Right, but he's in.
I know, but it's really difficult to get these guys through.
What are you talking about? He's got a totally intimidated Senate. How's it hard? Yeah. It took 20 minutes.
All I'm saying is it's a 4-month term, right? It's temporary. He's on leave. He's on unpaid leave. He's not going to get paid for his other. He's not going to get paid for his other position. So he's on unpaid leave, and he's just doing this through January. So I don't really have a problem with that at all because it's a 4-month appointment. It's like a recess appointment. So I don't have a problem with it. And he's not getting paid for both jobs. He's on unpaid leave from the other one. So this is a different job. And the guy's an impressive dude. And he got his PhD in 2010 from Harvard.
It's another step away from what most people think ought to be going on there.
Yeah. Well, but you know, if you look at the series that I have these like 10 yields, market yields on treasuries with the federal funds rate. And if you were just to look at that and you looked at it objectively and you put away the D's and the R's and you valued the Fed, you thought the Fed did a great job, which I don't think the Fed does a good job. But if you value the Fed and you look at this data, you would conclude this data is as of yesterday. I took a screenshot today from Fed. All the yields are headed down. All the yields, except for one, are below the current federal funds rate. The only one that's above the federal funds rate, and it's barely above it, is the 20-year market yield that's on the Fed's website.
Right.
All of them are headed down. And so what it looks like to me is, if, again, this is a big if you believe the Fed is necessary, I don't. But if you do, and you looked at this, you'd
go... When you say the Fed's not necessary, you're talking the entire Fed?
Well, in terms of monetary policy. But if you think
the Fed is necessary... So who should do it? Trump? Obama?
Well, no, I'm not saying that.
Well, then who's going to do it?
Markets. Yeah, investors.
How do markets control the amount of money in the system?
Well, they're basically setting the rates right now. They have rates set lower than what the Fed has, with the exception of one, the 20-year.
What? Okay, so Why does that surprise you? They've been putting, you're the guy out of all of us. I've been mentioning the money supply growth as being way higher than it ought to be because it's very.
Tom, I'm not taking a position on this. I'm just looking
what I'm
at
saying
the
is
data
why
from the outside.
But you said that the money supply growth is going to be up to 10%. So with that happening,
that is slowing though. It went from 10. Right. Now it's down to about 9, appears to be slowing.
When the money supply growth is where it is, short-term rates should go down, and they have. So they've essentially, it's no longer 4.25, it's more like 4, right? So when they lower a quarter point tomorrow, they're just lowering right to where it already is. They're making the announcement, correct?
Yeah, I know, but when you're looking at the chart I'm looking at, all the rates but one are below the current federal funds rate. So that tells me investors think the federal funds rate should be probably at 3.5. That's what I'm seeing in this chart. I'm not looking at it from a Trump perspective. I'm not looking at it from a Democrat perspective because when a Republican runs for office or a Democrat runs for office, they don't like what the current Fed is doing. But as soon as they get in the office, they want the Fed to lower interest rates. I mean, Trump did that. He rightfully said in 2016 that the Fed has created a fake economy. But as soon as he got into the office, he was asking the Fed to keep rates lower or push them lower. So they all say the same thing. But I'm just looking at this chart, and I'm looking at it from the perspective of somebody who appreciates the Fed and what they do. I'm looking at it from their perspective, and I'm saying the federal funds rate probably should be around 3.5. It's probably set too high. That's all I'm saying. Now, do I agree with that? No, because I don't think the Fed should be setting these interest rates. I think market just should set them. They should set the federal funds rate maybe at the lowest.
The Fed controls how much money's in the system, so they're part of the. with the part here, here's actually the question I would love to have you answer.
Yeah.
We, I mean, I think you know, I don't know if many people, your interest rates are supposed to be a combination of the real rate of interest, which to a certain extent the Fed can control in the short term, and people's anticipation of inflation. Right? Now, from 2000 to whatever, I'm going to say to 2015 almost, we had inflation, but we ducked it, we lied to people, in my opinion, and we hid it in the medical community to a large extent.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And
yeah.
So we said the inflation was 1.5% all those years. It probably really was 3.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
And so maybe it was a 3.5, which doesn't sound bad, except people aren't getting 3.5% more a year in well, in income. So you have, over a long period of time, drained essentially wage earners.
Oh, yeah,
in the meantime, yeah, by lowering the dollar value, you've had a pretty much a rally in the stock market for 25 years. So you've pushed asset prices higher. God help you if you're a renter and not owned your house.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's,
but, Tom, what you're doing is you're asking the organization, the institution that is supposed to keep inflation low, it is the creator of the inflation, and you're asking it to lower inflation when its job is to create inflation.
Well, it comes down to
are the solution all in one.
Are they really independent? I mean, Jimmy Carter, which is vilified by
they're not independent. I don't think they've ever been independent.
The one guy that was the guy Jimmy Carter put in there.
I think he was. I think Volcker was probably the least worst of the bad of the lot. Yeah, I agree with that.
So right now, are you really willing to just, without even a fake attempt at independence, are you willing to put the interest rates in Trump's hands or Obama's or anybody else's, without any shred of
personally, I think the Fed is the creator of inflation. It is the problem.
I think
and we're asking it to slow the inflation that it creates. I don't think that's a job that an organization can do.
Okay, they're.
Central planning didn't work in the Soviet Union. It should not be used in the United States. This is a central planning organization whose job is to create a monopoly, crush competition, and inflate the currency.
In our system, somebody has to maintain the when we have a system where money can go up and down because you and I take a loan, somebody has to monitor that. Because on the way up, the money rises dramatically. We would have huge pluses and huge minuses. Somebody has to retard that a little bit on both sides.
Yeah, but the problem is they don't retard it.
Okay, but look at the difference.
They cause it.
Look at the difference in what happened in the Civil War. The Union people, whoever was running the Treasury or whatever, our inflation, when I say our, the Union inflation was probably, money supply growth was about 10% a year.
That's because the Treasury was pyramiding. They created the greenback.
No.
And it wasn't convertible to gold.
10% a year, which is in wartime pretty good, actually. The Confederacy, on the other hand, was up like 30 or 40% a year.
Inflated slower than the other, but they were both inflated.
Okay, but I'm saying 10% during wartime is generally not bad. All right? It's, you know.
Well, come on. If the Union had inflated at 20%,
did
you think anybody would be supporting the war?
During COVID, we did 40% in 18 months.
Oh, I know. I agree. Yeah.
Right,
but let me ask you this question. The Union was restrained because if they had inflated at 20, there would be no support for the war, and they would have to stop the war.
I'm saying the Confederacy inflated it like 3 times that.
But what I'm saying is the Confederacy wasn't really restrained because everybody in the South was like unified behind this effort to secede from the Union, whereas as in the Union, the states that remained in the Union, if they had inflated to 20%, then I think you would have had people outraged.
Whatever the reason, the Union
they
was
were restrained by the voter.
Where
in the Confederacy, they weren't.
That was they did a pretty good job in the North and did a horseshit job in the South. That's the summary.
Tom, again, it comes to the fact that if they had inflated at 20%, at 30%,
whatever the reason. Whatever reason, the fact is they didn't.
Lost support for the war.
Whatever it is, they didn't. In the South, they did. Not to mention that the currency that they printed out was easy to counterfeit, so it got worse.
Yeah.
And after the war, when the Union, the remaining U.S., wanted to get back on the gold standard, they drained the money supply, the money out of the system. So you actually had one of the highest periods of time in this country of growth of industry and growth of everything was from like 1866 through 1872. And during that whole period, you had deflation.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and we're told that deflation is bad. I think deflation is great.
Well, it's, I don't know if it's, I don't think you should have deflation. I don't think you should have inflation. You should have, the money supply should grow essentially the
rate.
Well,
it just depends on your perspective. If you're a landowner, you don't want deflation. If you own a bunch of loans, you don't want deflation. If you're a banker, you don't want deflation.
Well, that's,
a banker and landowners want inflation. And that's what the job
started the whole show by saying that we have a landowner in the office.
I'm a landowner too, but I'm also
not to the same level.
Oh no, I'm not.
Do you own a Doral and three other places?
No, I don't own that.
What I'm saying is, somewhere along the line here, there needs to be. I don't care who does it, whether it's the Fed or somebody or other. The decision needs to be long term. It should be, all right, look, we're going to have growth of 2% a year. We have population growth of 2% a year.
But, you know, I think
the money supply should grow 2% a year.
But I think what we're observing in the data right now is it's really hard to do that, and that's the argument
sure
that Austrians have.
Sure it is.
It's really hard to do that because most of the money that is being created is created via bank lending.
I understand that.
So not the Federal Reserve.
That's why.
So I think it's really difficult for the Fed to throttle M2. I think they're doing a really good job of trying to do it, but are they doing a very good job of it? No, because it's growing at 8-9% a year.
I think they could do a much better job of it if they wanted.
I don't think it's possible. I think this is the best they can do. And M2.
Hell, they still got how many trillion dollars of bonds? Sell a few of them.
I know, but what I'm saying though is they're not adding any money to the banking system.
They're not letting the stuff
roll off their balance sheet. They're not buying mass quantities of securities like they did after the financial crisis. They
should be selling.
Very, very.
They have a balance sheet bigger than it's ever been up to COVID. They could let some of that loose by the day and retard it more. They could do that easy.
What I'm saying is they're as restrictive probably as they've been in the last 20 years. If M2 continues on its current trend through
next year,
M2 will have increased by about 8-9%.
How is that restrictive?
Well, compared to what they've done in the past, I think they're pretty restricted because they're not aggressively buying any more securities.
From 2000 to 2020, they averaged what per year? 5 or 6% with the 2% growth? That's incredibly inflationary.
But what I'm saying right now is they're not buying securities. They're just letting them roll off. The ones that they've purchased, they're letting them roll off. They're not buying securities. In the past, when the Fed bought securities, what did that do? That when they purchased securities from banks, that pushed interest rates down.
No, you got it.
You're not buying securities right now.
You got it the
and
other.
Yet,
you got it the other way. You're opposite here. You got it backwards.
They're not buying securities right now.
Buying securities puts money in the system. Selling securities
exactly.
takes money out of it. They're selling securities,
but not enough. That's what I'm saying. They're not buying securities right now. They're not injecting money into the banking system.
But now
yet.
It's their duty now to retard the system because you just mentioned how much the margin interest and all the other stuff has blown it up on its own. So they need to retard faster is what I'm saying, if they want to do the job right.
What I'm saying is it looks to me like, again, this is not from my perspective. This is the perspective
right, okay,
of somebody
well,
that watches.
We got to stop arguing about this. What does it mean for somebody who's an investor? Is more money going to stay in the system? Should I sit here with my hands in my pockets and let the gold go up another $400? Or should I say it's enough? That's what everybody wants to find out. I mean, is Oracle going to go to?
Well, I think the Fed's going to. I think the inflation is going to continue.
All right, so you're talking Oracle's going to be 500 before it's 100, and you're talking about gold's going to be whatever, 3,700 or 3,800 before 4,000 before it's 3,000, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm not very good at these kind of predictions. Well, but I think the Fed's going to continue to inflate. At some point, it's going to pop. These bubbles are going to pop. And whoever's holding the bag at that moment is going to be in a lot
why,
of trouble.
Why would anybody that is under the age of 50 believe what you just said? It hasn't popped ever. And if it does, it's a huge buying opportunity.
Well, you look at the housing prices, and man, the housing price index is twice that of it was back in 2007.
I know. Why would anybody? Why would I go on national TV and talk about this thing popping when people go, "Where is this guy coming from? Is he 100 years old? What is he?"
I don't know when it's going to pop, but it's going to pop because this thing is inflated. There are price bubbles everywhere. I mean, my brother Ryan and I had this conversation on Facebook. We're talking about how the Atlanta Falcons hired Cousins at $130 million a year and then drafted Penix at the same time, about the same time, and are paying him $130 million a year. Now, why is that? Because the NFL owners, they see a $130 million salary because of the inflation that has been created and how that inflation, that monetary inflation, has inflated the and continues to inflate NFL team property prices. That $130 million is essentially a write-offable expense for insurance in case Penix gets hurt.
Well, their view
now,
of the world.
In the absence of all that inflation, I don't think that's a moral hazard. I don't think that decision would have been made. But there's so much money sloshing around here that the Fed has created in this Cantillon effect that an NFL owner can throw $130 million at this quarterback and $100.
Well, it's also we're talking about a cartel. We're talking about a cartel with their nose firmly up the ass of government.
Yeah,
football.
And now it's a cartel. Yeah, definitely.
And so we had a discussion 20, the other day.
32 teams together form a monopoly. That is a cartel.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, but now you should have been on discussion.
Protected by government.
You should have been on discussion the other day where the report came out that in the last, what was it, 10 years or something, 85% of Americans did not keep up with their wages now. And it's not talking about their stock holdings. And if they own a house or two, their wages did not keep up with inflation. But when you look at NFL teams, and I guess we put baseball teams in there, but let's keep it with NFL. And when I opened up the conversation, I forget who even was on, talking about different people's view of the world. If you're somebody slugging away with a job, even if you're a professor, you don't. If the inflation over the next 5 years is 6%, you really don't expect 10% raises every year. I hope you get them, but I don't think you expect them.
No, we don't get those.
And so now, on the other point, you've got the Bears trying to build a stadium in Arlington Heights, and I'm looking at the numbers. I'm pretty good at numbers. Okay, we're talking $5 billion. The team is making, pull a number out of my ass, $200 million a year, which is pretty good for a family that supposedly needs all our help, right? So say they're making $200. Well, even if they get 6% interest, that's $300. So there goes all the profit plus, right?
On
the interest part.
Yeah, but I don't think their interest rate is going to be 6%.
All right, let me finish.
They're probably going to get more like 4 or 5.
All right, let me finish. So what do you need to have happen if your view of the world is inflationary like you say it's going to be? All right, now what does that mean? That means in the year, what would it be? We'd be 2035 instead of 2025. Ticket prices are going to be up 3 times, 2.5 times. Your money from the people on TV is going to be up 3 times. The price of a beer is going to be $30, $35. This is really what we're talking, right? It sounds crazy, but it's not. Now, what do you need to have happen so you can make it from here to there? You need 2 things. One is you need a low rate on your interest that's going to be way less than the inflation rate. So you're going to go whine and do whatever you can to the authorities to give you essentially a state of Illinois rate, like at 4% instead of paying 6 or 7 or 10 if it was just on you. So you got to get that rate under what you think the inflation rate is, correct? And oh, by the way, you got to whine to the governor and kiss his ass to get a property tax freeze for 20 years, because 20 years from now, the tax you're paying now, everything else will be up three times except your taxes. And that's exactly what they're doing. It's like they listen to the show, hell. That's exactly what they're doing. And for the rest of us to fall for it, my faith in human nature and in Americans and in politics is way less than yours. I mean, if we fall for this crap, we deserve it, I guess.
Yeah.
Same way, if we let a president that owns all this stuff inflate the place so he can pay off his mortgage at the Doral, we're out of our goddamn mind. And that's where we're going.
Well, the problem is people on the right don't like the institution if their man isn't in the office.
Right.
And the same thing is true for people on the left. And my contention is the reason why that is because the institution that you want to save the economy is the institution that creates the inflation. It creates the moral hazards, that creates the recklessness in lending. And if you want to fix it, you have to reform banking so it's more like a warehouse.
You don't have to reform banking. Just have the Fed do what they're supposed to do.
Warehouse. It has to be more like a warehouse.
What are you talking about? They have to do what they're supposed to do.
No, what they're supposed to do is what they've been doing, and what they've been doing isn't paying too good.
They're supposed to be putting inflation in there because the government's spending more than they want to spend, and the Fed has been bailing them out. Correct?
Well, yeah, but that creates a moral hazard in Congress.
It's pretty hard to fix the government without having the government fix themselves, because who else is going to do it?
But the government can't fix itself, Tom.
So what do we do? Blow them all up? Blow the whole world up?
No, I'm not saying blow them up. What I'm saying is the fact that the Federal Reserve is the lender of last resort and bails out the politicians.
We elect these people. If we don't think we have any chance of changing it, I don't know, maybe we should change the system or do something. I mean, what are we going
to
do?
Well, I think we have to change the system, yeah. That's
to what? Not to not elected?
No, I'm not talking about politicians not being elected.
Okay, well...
What I'm saying is, Tom, the Federal Reserve is the enabler. It is the reason why these politicians run these massive deficits.
Well, so the solution, which is long-term, is to elect people that don't overspend.
Yeah.
Where they don't have to do this.
But the problem is...
Stop telling me what the problem is. What's the solution?
Well, Tom, the solution is the problem. What I mean by that is we want politicians to lower government spending.
All right, am I getting my ticket to Ireland or Italy today? Where am I going? Is it totally hopeless?
Well, I think it is.
I think it completely is. Well, I guess every time I put a solution out there, you say that one won't work. I don't think there is a solution.
I honestly don't think there's a solution.
Do you think Ireland wants all of us?
I think what's going on here is the politicians say they want to lower government spending, but not in their district. Because if they do that, they're not going to get reelected.
The politicians are a bunch of crooks. You vote for a politician, you tell me changing the politician and voting for somebody else, that's not a solution. Okay,
well,
that's not.
Let's just say I'm going
to Ireland. Where are you going?
Well, I don't know where I'm going. Hopefully this won't happen, but honestly, I think we have tickets to the fall of the Roman Empire. Honestly, I think we do.
Then we better be the first out.
Happened to Rome is happening in the United States today.
Okay, but I understand it. But if you're saying there is no solution, well, that's a problem. But now, if it's the Titanic, I'm bringing my own lifeboat.
Yeah.
Is it? You're saying that no way in hell are we savable? By the way, part of me agrees with you. I'm just hoping that there is. I mean.
I'm hoping there is too. I'm praying
well,
there is.
I don't think we're
honestly.
Do you think we're in as bad a shape as the Civil War? Do you think we're in as bad a shape as 1933? I don't think so.
I think they've done a really good job of dividing us. The left hates the right, and the right hates the left.
We weren't divided in the Civil War.
Well, I think there's as much hatred on the left and the right as there was back then between Democrats and Republicans.
By the way, we forgot to mention
Republicans
this yesterday.
Republicans were Northerners. Democrats were Southerners.
We got a dash, but I have to mention this. This weekend, an old-time politician in the state, Jim Edgar, died. He was a governor up to 99 or 2000, I think. And generally liked by just about everybody. And I was reading this thing about him where they said he was part of a breed of, you could call them Midwest Republicans. Very moderate, pro-choice, worked with both sides of the aisle, very effective both as a Secretary of State and as a governor. The accolades from the guy were flying from both sides of the aisle, people that knew him, saying he was the greatest to work with, he trained everybody, was an honest man, never took a dime, blah, blah, blah. I'm reading this article about there's nobody like that left anymore. How scary,
no, there isn't.
How scary is that?
Our system is set up he would have, like
he,
that.
He was a Republican guy.
Yeah.
But guys like Paul Simon and people like that, Illinois people at the time, were the Democratic guys. I bet they agreed on 90% of the issues. I don't even know what they would fight about. Maybe some school funding or something. I don't know. But, I mean, there wasn't much difference and between a moderate Republican and a moderate Democrat, and there probably still isn't. But this,
well, I think the difference between then and now is we got the social media, and you have to be outrageous to get followers. You have to be outrageous to get reelected. By the way, the last thing I want to say is Notre Dame got hosed against Texas A&M. That nose tackle from Notre Dame, I think it's number 47, he got tackled on that last touchdown.
Now, do you think
that should have been flagged?
Now, is that just SEC versus Notre Dame's not in a conference? You know, they had called two penalties in a row on the other team for false starts. Were they just afraid to make it three in a row to look bad? Or
I think so. I don't
know. Or is the money entering the system?
Maybe it has a little bit to do with it. I mean, these guys are under a lot of pressure. Right?
I mean, the difference was what was?
Well, were the officials?
I'm saying it flipped. It wasn't like it was between the point spread. It flipped Notre Dame winning and Texas A&M winning. How much money is on that game? I mean, can you? Yeah. Or do we think the refs don't know who's going to win or lose now?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on them, and they do feel like, man, I called two against the other team. Do I call this third one against them? Because it might look – there's a lot of second-guessing in the mind of an official, but they should have called that because that was an obvious holding.
Yeah.
Which decided the game.
Sure did. And now, I mean,
of all the holdings that I saw this year, it was the worst.
It was worse.
And it was a no call.
Plus, there's no reason that was a flagrant foul on that guy.
Yeah.
They both ducked their head.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, so, it's, you know. But now that there's kind of money on the game, I was with a guy, we'll go one more minute here, the other night who was betting on the Indiana game. Indiana's up by 60 or something. And they're driving for this touchdown. I'm going, what are they doing?
Washington State got beat by that amount.
He goes, what do you mean? I gave 63 points. And the over-under is like, 62. They better score or I lose. I'm sitting there going, you got to be kidding me.
I don't know if I'd ever make a bet where the team wins by 62.
Well,
because at some point, the team up by 62 is going to take the foot off the throttle.
I think, not in this day and age, not when you know.
Yeah.
But I think what happened to this guy, I think the spread was only 48. So I think this guy must have put his bet down after they're probably already up 14 or something.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
So I'm sitting, because it keeps changing the whole time, right? You can put the bet down whenever you want to, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, how come?
I think people who are gambling their way over the long run, the house wins. Just say that right now. The house wins over the long run.
Let me ask you this: how come 40 years ago, 50 years ago, people thought any type of connection between professional and college sports and gambling was something you could not let happen because it degraded the game, sort of like the Black Sox scandal, the White Sox scandal. And now, all of a sudden, it's money. We don't care. We're all in. Or do you think people change that much? I don't think people have changed at all, do you?
Well, I think what it is, the more we try to restrain markets, the more those markets try to break free of those restraints. And I've always viewed college players like Patrick Ewing being laborers, and they should be paid their marginal revenue product.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about...
I know, but what I'm saying is people want to engage in exchanges, whether it's money and bets or products or services or information. And the more you restrain it, the more these markets actors are going to try to break free.
Did you become
of those restraints?
Did you turn into Mr. Fatalism today or what? So you're saying there's no way on earth that some college kid on the bench shouldn't know that the points are 10 and he bet on the other team. I mean, I guess that's a view of human nature. I mean, we do tend to go down that road. But we usually try and come
when
back
you put
up.
When you put a bunch of speed bumps, what do people do? They drive around.
There's a massive difference between Paul Hornung and Alex Karras being suspended for being
Well, there was an honor in that stuff, but there was also a lot of restraints in human behavior, right?
If you're saying we were wrong to suspend him for being around, hanging around gamblers, now we don't care if they bet.
I think the betting was going on, and I think the labor was being paid, but it was being paid illegally. Now it's just out and open in the wide open air, right? It's no longer in the black market. It's in the legal market.
Whatever. On that note, do a pleasant week. Jeez. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ's up 48. Fed meets today. Announcement's not till tomorrow. So we'll probably be slow today. We were yesterday. And tomorrow, we'll see. Could be interesting. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
the end of it, and that's all, folks.